And welcome back in. Hour number three of Morning Drive on this Thursday. Great to have you in. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe with you live inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. Let's get to some Titans conversation as we welcome in Jason Wolf, Titans beat writer and reporter for the Tennessean. Jason, we appreciate a couple of minutes this morning. How are you, bud?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing excellent. Great to have you on. Let me ask you first and foremost, in the Ndamukong Suh watch, we've seen now in the last, 12, 15 hours or so that the Raiders in that meeting has been canceled. So scratch off one possible destination for Sue. When we talk about the Titans, the Rams, the Saints, how would you handicap the teams from a standpoint of most likely to land Sue's services?
I think that the Rams and the Titans are certainly the top two. I'm not sure which order you want to put them in. I'd probably say Rams first, they both have plenty of cap space, and I'm not in Sue's head. I'm not sure exactly what it is he's looking for. If he's looking for, Los Angeles and to be on what could be a historically good defensive line, or if he's looking for, Tennessee, either one gives him a really good shot at the playoffs. Either one of them should give him a pretty healthy paycheck. And, it's just about where he's most comfortable, who he wants to play for, I think.
Why is Ndamukong Suh a good fit for this locker room, this general manager, this coaching staff, this defense?
Well, I don't know that he's a good fit for this locker room. That's the big knock against him, right? I mean, Miami let him go. It was obviously a monetary issue, but that wasn't the only thing that we saw as being an issue. We heard rumblings about character concerns. I heard similar things out of Detroit, I believe. Sue is all about Sue is kind of the word coming out of Miami. And it's tough to remain happy when you're losing, when you're performing at the best of your ability, you're in your prime, the years are slipping away, and you're not experiencing team success. I don't know how much a defensive tackle can affect the game in terms of, wins and losses over the course of a season. Certainly, he's had some declining production in traditional statistics over the last few years. You could say that could be a result of double teams. I mean, he's certainly among the best defensive tackles still in the game. But then, the Dolphins around him didn't do a whole lot. So, the character concerns are the big red flag in terms of coming to Tennessee. John Robinson has always been, very big about saying he doesn't want the best 53 guys. He wants the right 53 guys. And to a certain extent, you hear that from every coach, every general manager. But I believe that that's, a guiding principle for the Titans. And, I don't know that he's a fit here. Now, his former defensive line coach in Miami is here. And if Sue were actually a cancer in the locker room, I don't imagine that he would have vouched for him and they would have brought him in here for a free agent visit. So perhaps that's a little bit overblown. Beyond that, he's still a very, very good player. It's just a matter of how much money he's going to command.
We are talking to Jason Wolf, Titans beat writer for the Tennessean. Jason, let's get to the big off-the-field drama, the Twitter spat between Deion Sanders and Kevin Byard. From the Titans' perspective, what do you make of the way Byard fired back at Deion Sanders, and is this any extra incentive, any extra motivation to prove doubters wrong and to build in 2018?
Well, I mean, everybody is pretty much in agreement who I've heard from and spoken to is that, Deion was totally off base, right?
No question. Jason, he looks clueless.
I mean, you can have your opinion about who's the best safety in the game, right? But then when you fire back and say, you continue to be a fan and I'll keep being the man and you're talking to the first team all-pro safety, free safety, and you're a Hall of Fame guy who played in the secondary who is now a paid analyst on NFL Network. I mean, that's a pretty bad look. The Titans, I think, look, Kevin Byard is who he is. He's a great guy. He's outspoken. He's supremely confident to begin with. I mean, I first met him down at the Senior Bowl, obviously. He's been around Middle Tennessee for years. given, you know, given his time at MTSU. But the Titans love who he is as a player, as a person, the character, the outspokenness. Look, he didn't just get into, like, a Twitter fight. There was nothing nasty about it. He was showing respect to Honey Badger. He was showing respect to Deion Sanders. He's just like, look, man, the stats and the video don't match up. How can you make this comment? Oh, by the way, I'm a current player. So, yeah, you know, Kevin said that he took, you know, the slight from Deion. He actually took a screenshot of it. It's now his lock screen on his phone. For a man who did not need any extra motivation coming up in all-pro season, which included, by the way, a Pro Bowl snub. He only got in as an alternate, which was kind of wild after leading the NFL in takeaways. It's all the motivation he needs. I mean, it's just it's a bad look for Deion, and you know, it's just fuel of the fire for Kevin Byard and the rest of the Titans. And you know what? It was pretty cool to see so many players from across the league, including Jalen Ramsey, rush to Byard's defense.
Jason, what's interesting is about this Sue conversation, a big part of it has been, hey, how can this team find an identity on defense? And I think Dick LeBeau was that identity for a couple of years, and now that he's gone, it's not a huge star-studded team, but Kevin Byard has the makeup, in my opinion, of somebody that could create that identity, that Ray Lewis type of leadership, Ed Reed guy, that he's fiery, he plays the game with passion, he talks a lot, and but he does it in a funneled, effective way. Is he the guy that, let's say Ndamukong Suh doesn't come here, is he the guy that you think the Titans should be looking to develop into that leader and that identity on defense?
Yes, absolutely. And not only from an attitude point of view, but from intelligence perspective as well. You know, he is a leader out there on defense. He knows everything about every position. He knows where guys are supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there, reads the entire field. He's outspoken. He's a perfect team leader. Kevin Byard's the guy that you want. And, you know, that's one of the reasons. It was his intelligence and it was his demeanor that attracted the Titans to him, right from the jump. When they went down there and met with him at Middle Tennessee before the draft, remember, this guy wasn't even invited to the combine after leading the school in interceptions. The career school record. So they went down there. Dick LeBeau went down there. They sat in the classroom with him all day, you know, did board work, and they came away so impressed. They went and they got him at the top of the third round. So, yeah, they've envisioned him being one of, if not the leader on defense from the moment they took him.
Jason Wolf from the Tennessean is our guest here on Morning Drive. And Jason, it's Chase. Hope you're doing well. I've been reading your grades about free agency, and I still look at wide receiver as a position that I think this team needs to address. I know that the hope is Corey Davis and Taywan Taylor, they will improve in year two. Tajae Sharp coming off the injury and basically going into his second year after missing last year. That's a very young receiver room. I kind of feel they need to add a veteran presence in there with Harry Douglas and Eric Decker moving on. What do you think?
Well, you know, Rashard is still a very strong number two. He's a veteran guy. Deion Lewis's impact may be felt more in the passing game than in the run game. He's certainly going to help as far as the passing game goes, being a threat to catch the ball out of the backfield. You know, they could. They're not going to check every single box all offseason as far as getting a veteran leader goes. It's not like you're going to find that guy in the draft. You know, you want a veteran leader, he has to be a free agent. And then to what extent is that guy going to contribute? I think Eric Decker is still a viable option if they want to bring him back. He hasn't signed anywhere yet. But I think they just really hoping to see the current crop of guys develop. I don't get the sense from inside that building that they view the wide receiving core as a problem. I think they have, they believe that they have the right mixture, they have the right ingredients, and they just have to allow that to, you know, coalesce, basically. They need to let these guys grow together. And we saw Corey Davis begin to emerge toward the end of last season. You know, if he can continue on that trajectory, Rashard Matthews can continue to be a very strong number two. You know, Taywan Taylor and Tajae Sharp, you know, Tajae Sharp returns. Those guys contribute in the slot. They got Deion Lewis coming out of the backfield. I think that's a really good mixture right there. They could use a little bit more depth. I don't know that they're going to find that veteran leader, the Andre Johnson or the Eric Decker, to come in and kind of show these guys the way. I think it might be their time now to take the reins themselves.
Jason, do you have any idea how to describe what Matt LaFleur's offense is going to look like?
You know, it's tough because while he was the offensive coordinator last year with the Rams, he did not call any plays. Now, we see the systems that he's come out of, right? Like, we saw what the Rams were able to accomplish last year. The season before that, when he was the quarterback's coach in Atlanta, the year they went to the Super Bowl, we saw what they were able to do. I think that the running backs are going to play a much bigger role as receiving threats. I think that's going to be the primary change, and I think we're going to see a lot more tempo. You know, they're going to play to Marcus Mariota's strengths. They're going to get him in positions where he can succeed and be his most effective. And we've seen that happen over the last couple of years, predominantly in the no huddle. That doesn't mean that they go no huddle all the time, but I think maybe you see a little bit more tempo, a little bit more of a quicker pace out of this offense moving forward.
Jason, good spot, man. We appreciate the time. Thank you very much, and hope to talk to you down the line.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it. Jason Wolf covers the Titans for the Tennessean. Is your bracket busted already? Well, we have another bracket challenge for you with the official 102.5 The Game 16-team bracket challenge. It's brought to you by the Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Midtown Express Pharmacy. Sign up at thegamenashville.com today, and you could win a PlayStation 4 Pro.
Ooh,
how about that? When we come back, is there too much football? Kale, how can you say that? Too much football, are you crazy? We will explain coming up next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's gonna be a heartache tonight. A heartache tonight. Oh, yeah, there's going to be a party tonight because the Preds are back in the building. That's why. Going for five in a row as they take on Toronto. Welcome back in, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Wait a minute. Do you think they're saying there's going to be a party tonight?
What does it say?
Heartache.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
That's a bad mistake by me.
Have you guys seen the
30 years of my life, I've gotten the lyrics wrong.
Is it Volkswagen that used to do an old commercial where they had Elton John songs playing?
Thank you, Chase, for just totally destroying me, but I feel better about it.
I couldn't let that go. I'm
like
sorry.
Thank you, Chase, for saying something like that. Do you remember the Volkswagen commercial where they had people in the car singing the Elton John Rocket Man song and like everybody had a different lyric to the song?
Wait a minute. There's going to be a what?
A heartache tonight.
Well, no, there's not going to be any heartache here because we're going to take care of the Maple Leafs. That's what's going to happen.
There'll be some heartache in Toronto. Does that count?
Yeah. Home of the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Heartache tomorrow night, Eagles will be at Bridgestone Arena.
I might need to reevaluate my life and just figure out if I'm actually screwing other lyrics up in recognizable songs.
What do you think the Rocket Man line is? Burning out his fuse up here alone, I believe, is the quote, if I'm reading the internet correctly.
Let me see these lyrics here. What do we got here?
Are you arguing this? Are you actually arguing this right now?
No, but I'll tell you what I am going to argue.
You're digging yourself deeper.
Here's what I am going to argue. Yesterday, our stupid poll question was, yes, cue that up a little bit, Josh. Bring it back.
How do you get party?
I don't know.
I mean, they're close. Party and heartache are close, but...
There's going to be a party when this team brings home the Stanley Cup.
Somebody's going to hurt someone before the night is through. I guess that could happen.
Do you think the Clash wrote the song Rock the Cash Bar? Or do you think it was Rock the Casbah? What do you think it is? All right, good.
I know that one.
All right, good.
But I am going to dispute the poll question yesterday about the effectiveness of the 30-minute or less nap, because I told you guys yesterday in our chain text message after the show, I took a nap. I closed my eyes at exactly 1 o'clock. I set the alarm for 2, and I want to say I probably conked out between 1:20 and 1:30. So I got roughly 30 minutes, and I woke up, and I felt worse.
Right, because you didn't complete REM sleep.
No, that's not the scientific.
No, the scientific thing is
the science
less
is
than 30,
less than
right?
30 minutes is a little quick power nap. You don't ever get into REM cycle.
And I'm disputing less than 30 minutes.
With all due respect to your scientific study, Nick, I think your one nap and then the rest of the scientific world. I think I'm going with the rest of the scientific world.
Well, and also
with all due respect to your one nap,
considering you just called Heartache Tonight, Party yeah. Tonight. Yeah. I'm questioning
so it's a
lot
me, it's,
of
it's a me problem.
It's a you thing. It's
I'm going to go with the, all of the scientists in the world instead of your nap.
Fair enough.
Because I wake up tired after every nap, whether it's 30, less than 30, more than 30, whatever. I wake up tired. There's varying degrees of tiredness.
Okay, so I will try it again today since I've got to do the honky-tonk hat trick tonight. I'll try to get like a 27-minute nap today and see if I bounce back feeling better when I
When I doze off for like when I doze off for 18 to 20 minutes, which rarely happens when I do, then I'm ready to go. I was rip-roaring ready to go for Smashville Live last night because I got myself a little 18-minute nap.
All right, so the question is there too much football? And the reason we bring this question up is because obviously we got spring games that are coming up. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the relaunching of the XFL in 2020, and now there's going to be a spring league next spring, 2019, with the American Football Alliance. I never thought I would ask the question because I've always thought any football is good football, but are we now at a point where it is being oversaturated?
Well, I think what's interesting about this is how they're going about doing it. They learned a lot from their mistakes. Well, at least because it's an Ebersol production, right? And his father, Charlie Ebersol's father, Dick Ebersol, was a part of the XFL with an NBC TV partner. So they had the TV partner and they had everything in place. It just didn't work because they tried to go against the NFL. If you go with the NFL and you have the NFL's approval, now they've got a CBS television partner, right? They've got a big name executive director sort of guy running point with an Ebersol as his last name. And I think what makes this interesting to me is, as a fan, who are the players going to be and how do you tie it into the NFL to make it intriguing, right? Like tether it all together with the NFL. How do you do that? To me, it's guys that don't get drafted in the NFL that are then playing for a team that's in their region, and then they have the great ones have a chance to earn their way onto a summer camp roster spot. If it's all tied together with the NFL, then I think it's really, really intriguing to me. Like JT Barrett to me is not an NFL quarterback. But if JT Barrett played for a regional Midwest team in the middle of springtime after the draft, would all of a sudden there be A, interest to watch that from Ohio State and Big Ten fans? Yes. Could he have a chance to play his way onto a summer camp roster? Maybe so. To me, it's about how it's executed. And if it's tied to the NFL, it's during a time where there's no football, and it's with because to me, and I was thinking about this yesterday as I was reading this news, college football fans in this area in particular, we love our teams. Like, Alabama fans love Alabama players. Georgia fans love Georgia players. Well, half of them, 90% of them, don't play in the NFL. But would you still follow your favorite players if they were playing for a spring team in this league? I think you would. If you had a Birmingham, if you had a team in Birmingham loaded with SEC players, you don't think people would watch that in the middle of May?
If Jalen Hurts was like the quarterback or something?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those guys who play well have a chance to earn their way onto a roster spot in the NFL. I think if you tie it with the NFL and you do it regionally so that college football becomes a little bit more of the tie, I'm actually really intrigued by that.
I mean, here's the thing, though, because you're going to have the XFL, and that's going to be in the summer when it's really a dead period. I mean, there's nothing going on besides baseball and then the occasional World Cup and these fringe-type things. In the spring, you've got the Stanley Cup playoffs, you've got the NBA playoffs, you've got Major League Baseball, you've got golf, you've got a lot of different things going on. And I'm one of these guys that loves football, but between the NFL on Sundays, Mondays, and Thursdays, college football on Saturday, Friday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever days they throw
Thursday.
In the MAC and all this other stuff, to me, it's at a point now where I can't believe I'm going to say this because I am a football junkie first and foremost, specifically college football, but it's almost too much. You're diluting the product to the point
where
every day of the week I'm getting football. I don't need it.
Yeah, but you just spent yesterday saying how much you can't wait to watch every single spring game. So it's about the time of the year. I'm with you.
That's a one-day event.
I agree.
Like the Tennessee spring game is Saturday, April 5th
No,
or whatever.
I get you. I agree with you in the fall. By the time I get to – Monday night's the one that loses me because I love the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I just can't do the fifth day. Like, I need a break. I need Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to kind of regroup and get back to the Thursday game, whether that's NFL or college. But because to me, it's the start of the weekend. I'm still back thirsty for football again by Thursday. It's Monday where I'm just, like, dead and tired of it, and I'm like, oh, I need a break. But to me, the difference is by the end of the tournament, if the season were to start at the end of the tournament, the week after the Masters takes place the next weekend after the NCAA championship game in basketball on Monday, then the Masters starts Thursday. If spring football started the next weekend, and again, the draft might have to be changed or whatever, let's forget that, but just say that time block, half of April, May, and June is a 10-week season or something like that. You play 10 games, maybe an 11-week season. I think there'd be a huge market for football because people are salivating for football. It's not about, to me, it's about the time of year. It's oversaturated because we've crammed it all into every night of the week for like 17 weeks straight. Then there's like 5 or 6 months off where you just have nothing. So I think there's a void there. But again, to me, it's all about how it's done. I think you should have to have players that appeal regionally to those teams. So if there's going to be 8 teams in this league, I think if you've got a team in Portland, there needs to be players from that area on that team. If you've got a team in Louisville, there needs to be players from that area on that team to draw a regional appeal to it, because college football fans still care deeply about their favorite players that don't go to the NFL, and then they follow them in the CFL or whatever. There's that middle ground of how can we capitalize on college football's fandom for their players. By the way, maybe we create a little feeder system for ourselves where, hey, we find a couple of players we didn't actually find in the draft, and oh, by the way, we can make a little bit. They're gonna eliminate commercials, right? They're gonna limit the amount of commercials, which I think appeals. Mm-hmm. Limit the game time to make it as short and as digestible as possible. I think if you do it right, I think there's a lot of intrigue here with this type of product, but not the way the XFL is doing it, which is like in January, right? They're gonna start at the end of January. And pick up right where the NFL leaves off. I'm done with football at that point. I need a 2-month break and then bring me back to it.
Go ahead.
You gotta have something that has a partnership with the NFL. I mean, I or be a feeder league or however you want to word it. But I think if you do that, and then some of these guys that are playing in these games, could get invited to an NFL camp.
I mean, I totally agree.
I think that if you do that, it will be a success.
Here's the only downside to regionalizing this concept that you mentioned with certain areas, like you said, Portland and Birmingham or Louisville. I'll give you
just making up big cities without NFL teams.
I'll give you the reasoning behind why I think it wouldn't work. We'll do that on the other side. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. It is Morning Drive on this Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll talk to Rick Byrd, Belmont head coach, coming up next segment. A lot of basketball with him. He's going to be with us for probably a good 45 minutes. So really going to break down March Madness, Sweet 16, all things college basketball related. Great resource to have. So we appreciate Rick stopping by. Also, we've got Hal Gill. We've got On Tap tonight. We've got a lot to do, but with the football discussion and whether there is too much football, I'm going to give you the reason why I think it could be too much and it could fail in a moment based off of what Braden had to say. But, Chase, you brought up something interesting during the break as to why it could succeed, and this really caught my attention.
Well, so I was reading through this report of, everything that's going to be involved. Each roster, there's going to be 8 teams. They'll have 50 players each. They're going to have a regionally based draft that, will help build these rosters, and that goes with what Braden was saying. But one thing that really stood out to me was, and I'll read this from CBS Sports, other differences will include no kickoffs, and instead of onside kicks, the trailing team will receive the ball on their own 35-yard line facing fourth down and 10. There will also be a 30-second play clock and a mandatory 2-point conversion attempt after touchdown. So reading that tells me they don't have a kicker.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. The league has a chance to win.
I mean, they're doing everything to streamline the process in the game to make the game more enjoyable. I think the regional draft makes it easier to sell tickets and appeal to fans because, again, I think especially in the Southeast, if you put a team in Orlando or if you put a team in, Charleston or just pick a city in the Southeast and you loaded it up with SEC players that didn't make the NFL, I think there's plenty of appeal there for fans to go watch and follow and track their favorite players. And oh, by the way, like just imagine if Tim Tebow gets kicked out of the NFL and then all of a sudden is playing on an Orlando football team. Ticket sales are going to go through the roof.
I agree with you from the appeal standpoint, from a fan standpoint, but if we're talking about regional-based drafts, I don't think you're creating a level playing field because because the SEC guy is going to, like you said, like the Portland team, the SEC team is going to hammer the
Who cares?
Oregon team. And, no, and, not that and, I care, but I'm just
actually,
saying from a competitive
and I don't know about that because the best players in the Pac-12 who don't get drafted aren't any worse than the best players in the NSL that don't get drafted. I think they'd be pretty competitive, but forget that if it's competitive. Who cares if it's not competitive? The championship isn't what matters. What matters is I want something to do for 2.5 hours on a Saturday in the middle of April when I've got nothing to do, right? Like, it's not about, hey, we won this championship of the USA Football League. Like, that's not – people aren't going to be hanging banners in the rafters like that. It's going to be more about, hey, this is something fun to do in the middle of the time where we don't have football, and I get to watch JT Barrett play for the Louisville, you know, whatever, Mud Hens, and he's – and he, you know, and if I'm an Ohio State fan who lives, you know, 2 hours down the road, am I going to go watch – you know, my guy go play? Maybe I am. And I think that's appealing. I mean, again, this is purely an entertainment poll, right? This is purely like, how can we capture some entertainment? They already have a TV partner with CBS. So CBS is – that's a big part of it.
CBS is going to – big CBS is going to air the first game, which is the week after the Super Bowl that they also have. So that concerns me a little bit that it's that quick.
That's my problem with it.
But
I want it to be later in the year.
They'll utilize CBS Sports Network to air games and then have the championship on big CBS. So.
Well, they're probably trying to keep the momentum of football season going as opposed to getting that tune out where, you know, if you start doing it a few weeks or months afterwards, you're competing against people that have already checked out on football and have checked into hockey or basketball.
I totally disagree with that.
Really?
I think people get done with the Super Bowl and they're like, there's an exhale.
But
I think people are – there's a period of decompression, and then there's a period of, oh, my God, it's been 6 weeks without football. What am I going to do?
I'm more sad when football ends than relief.
No, I am too, but you're stretching it. Like, what you're doing is you're asking people to put a bunch of energy and passion into something. College football national championship game, we wait for so long for that to happen. Then the playoffs of the NFL, and then, boom, it happens, and there's this – we put so much energy into it. I find it hard to believe that you're going to then all of a sudden become vested the very next day or the very next week in something. But if all of a sudden you're starving, you haven't eaten for a long time, and you're starving in the middle of April for football, with all due respect to the NHL and to the NBA and to Major League, especially Major League Baseball, a football game in the middle of April or May would beat all Major League Baseball. It would beat college baseball. It would beat a lot of different sports. It may not beat an NBA playoff or an NHL playoff game, but on a Saturday or Sunday, it would be the thing that people watch.
Well, I mean, the main reason why I get so sad when football ends after the Super Bowl is because February comes around and I got to spend more time with my wife.
Yikes.
I mean, that's just, you know.
Dude. Whoa.
All right.
I can't.
No, I'm just being honest.
I'm glad she doesn't listen.
Moving on. No, the reason that I think they're doing it the week after the Super Bowl, and I do agree with this, is you have your season with your eight teams. You get done April of 2019 is when the championship would be. Then you give these players some time that, hey, you know what? Maybe they impressed. Maybe some NFL scouts were there. They were watching. And it's like, okay, you have a little bit of time to heal up. You can go to an NFL camp in July and be ready to go. So I think that having that gap in between the end of their season and the start of the NFL season isn't a bad thing because you give some of these guys an opportunity to impress NFL teams.
I agree with that, but wouldn't there still be a pretty big gap if the season – if it went for 10 weeks, let's say, 10 games or whatever, and it went from April 1st to the end of May or the middle of June, you're still talking about a month and a half before you even get to a camp. And frankly,
you eliminate OTAs.
Those guys aren't
going
to make a bunch of roster. I mean, there's going to be a very small percentage of those players are going to make a cut. I view it more like eating food.
Well, and
like
I understand,
Super Bowl, the Super Bowl to me is like my big giant meal with a big steak and a baked potato and a salad and a glass of wine and a whiskey to finish it off and a dessert and everything.
You're getting
like,
me hungry.
Like to me, that's what the Super Bowl is. And then you're asking people to like have fourth meal. Right after it. And that's what I think you want to starve people for football before you can bring it back to them to give it. But that's just, I guess that's just my.
There are a lot of things that could stem from this. If this works, then you have the NFL looking at, okay, maybe we expand the roster. Maybe we expand the practice squad. Maybe, you know, if they have expansion in the next few years, they add a team, which I think probably happens at some point.
You think the NFL's going to expand?
I think at some point.
Wow.
Maybe. I think it's too big. I think it's too big not to is what I mean. I think it will. because they're going to get, you know, in their own heads and say, hey, we're the best. And do
you think they're
going
to go to London or Mexico or Canada?
I think they'll add games before they add a team. They'll go 18 games
probably
before they add another
team. Just get rid of Cleveland.
They got a perfect they got a perfect balance right now of with four divisions in each conference and 16 teams. I'm not saying they should.
I'm just saying that they probably will. But my point is with this is, you know, if you you say that a small percentage of these players will make an NFL roster, under the current format, you're probably right. But if all of a sudden they're like, hey, you know what? You know, that quarterback's pretty good. I'd like to find a spot for him. Then you maybe go from a 10-man practice squad to a 15-man practice squad.
Here's another question. Is it all players – this is what would throw a total wrench and change into all of this. If players could go into the league out of high school, that would change the whole thing. If it was a mixture of guys who graduated or finished college and didn't get drafted or aren't good enough to make a team, you know, some of those guys that have maybe fallen out of the league, or is it guys that have come right out of high school where their decision is, hey, I'm going to take a scholarship to go play at XYZ State U, or I can make 50 or 60 grand a year playing in this spring league and prove my draft stock. That would throw a huge wrench into it as well, because if it becomes a feeder system truly like that, then the NFL will invest in it heavily because that's where they'll develop players.
And that's what they should do. And I just got asked a similar question. What if they take kids early after 2 years of college? And I think that that's something they would look at too. Look, all these leagues that have tried to come in and inform, they've gone about it the wrong way because all they've wanted to do is try and beat the NFL or compete with the NFL or be different from the NFL. If they come in and they're like, hey, you know what? We know we're not going to knock off the NFL.
No, we're tied to it.
If we're tied to
it,
and we're a development league and a true minor league system, they will be successful.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, coming up next, Rick Byrd, head coach from Belmont. He is here live in person. We're going to talk March Madness with him. He has coached against Arizona in the tournament 4 or 5 years ago. He's coached against Virginia in the NCAA tournament 3 years ago. We'll get some great insight from Rick coming up next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, welcome back in to Morning Drive on this Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Sweet 16 gets underway tonight as March Madness resumes, and here to break it all down and talk college basketball, we welcome in the head coach of Belmont, Rick Byrd, who joins the show, a man who just wins 20-plus games every year like it's just routine. Good morning, Coach. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, Coach, before we get into basketball, I do want to give you guys a chance. I know you're a huge tennis guy. I know you play tennis a lot. And Belmont, of course, for the first time in 40 years, is going to be hosting the Davis Cup between April 6th and 8th with Belgium and the United States. I want to give you a chance to sort of promote a thing that doesn't happen very often
the
United States.
No, well, thanks. I don't know how I became sort of the point person for a tennis event, but it's a huge one. And I think, you know, more people know about the Ryder Cup in golf. It's become a huge every other year event, and they've probably watched some of it and see how different the crowd and the players are in that golf event versus even a major or anything else. And and the Davis Cup is very much like that. The great thing to me about it is that we in Nashville, we got to go a long way any time, any year to go see this quality of tennis. Occasionally there'll be an exhibition come to town, but an exhibition pales in comparison to real competition. And when you start playing for teammates, when you take individual sport folks and they start playing for a team, it's a whole different level of stress on those guys, pressure on those guys, and you throw the country in on top of that. I think people will be pretty amazed at how serious it gets. And then the crowd's encouraged to be rowdy, frankly. And they've got cowbells and noisemakers and all kinds of stuff going on. And then they slow it down right about the time it's time to serve again. And then whoever wins the point, it goes on for that team. And I've watched some really good one on TV. I remember Federer and Wawrinka winning it for Switzerland, and how much it meant to those guys to win the whole thing. Andy Murray, the same thing for Great Britain a few years ago. I think the U.S. team, or at least the U.S. team, really feels like that this is a year they could win the whole thing. And so this is a big step for them.
Well, we need to support the home crowd, obviously, as well. Create a raucous atmosphere. Give them a home court advantage. USTA.com/Davis Cup. Tickets are available. The event, of course, April 6th through the 8th. You can check that out. So, like you said, not a lot of like elite level tennis driving distance for a week for a trip. So it's a very great opportunity to catch some really high level stuff.
Cincinnati has a really good tournament in August that you can go to. Atlanta's got a smaller level pro event prior to the U.S. Open. Other than that, you just got to really make a trip out of it. So we've sold 80% of the tickets, but I'm telling you, when they asked us if we could do it, we had to go measure the footprint of our arena when the seats were pulled out to see if it would fit, and it barely fit, which gives you an idea how great the seating is going to be. And for those that have been in the Curb Event Center, they know it for a basketball game, there's 5,000 seats, and there's not a bad one in the house, and it'll certainly be the same for tennis. So that part of it's good. So just because a lot of tickets are gone doesn't mean that you can't get a good seat.
Coach, I want to ask you a little bit about one of the big stories so far for March Madness, and that's Loyola Chicago and what they were able to do by, you know, knocking off Tennessee. You at Belmont have gone up against powerhouses like Arizona, like Virginia over the last 5 years in March Madness. What have you seen so far from this team, and obviously the storyline and Sister Jean and just kind of the whole story behind it that makes you think Loyola Chicago could continue this march?
Well, that's been a little more interesting to me because their lone freshman, the big kid inside, Cameron Crutwig, is a guy that we tried pretty hard to recruit and had him here on an official visit and visited him up there and watched him play a lot and felt like he could be a really good player for us, and we felt right because he's a really good player for them. And then the rest of their team is upperclassmen. And I think that's one of the things that's giving advantages, and we're seeing more mid-majors. Even though the mid-majors are kind of getting shunned in the selection process when it comes to at-larges, even in the NIT where we didn't get in, where we were hopeful to get in, and more power conference teams got in, then they're performing well when they get in there. And I think it's a lot because there simply are more upperclassmen, guys that have played together over a long period of time. And they play together. Their offense is really fun to watch. It's not just a pick and roll every time down the floor, or an isolation, which is more and more of what we see these days in college basketball. And nothing will surprise me in the two games this weekend.
I had a chance. I want to ask you about Maryland, Baltimore County, of course, against Virginia. I had a chance to talk to Ryan Odom, coach of the Retrievers, on the Saturday. They beat Vermont in the American East Championship. They hadn't beaten them in 23 games straight, something crazy like
right.
that. They hit a big shot at the end of that tournament to just get in.
Right.
I think that people always ask us in this job, like, hey, is a 16 ever going to win? Is a 16 ever going to win? And you sort of say no, and then you go, well, but parity is a thing. In every sport, we are all sort of the long arc of, you know, the long arc of time is bending towards parity, right? Like, are you surprised that you saw a 16 do what they did to
Yeah, I'm like you. I'm surprised. I would have answered no to that question, or at least a very probable no to that question, because we've been a 15 several times. And in 1 year, we almost beat Duke as a 15. But we also got thumped pretty good a couple of times, too, the first 2 years we were in it. And it's just a big stretch to go out there in that setting and play. You got to play great, and the other team's got to not play so good. Frankly, it's just what it is. You're going to play a top five team in the country if you're a 16 seed. I do think that one of the reasons is that 20 years ago, 15 years ago, even there are just so many kids playing basketball now. There's so many avenues for them to play it. There's thousands and thousands playing in the month of July, hopeful to be seen by college coaches and recruited to the Division I level. And there's just so many more kids wanting that now that's gone down in there's 351 Division I's, and there's some really good players on the teams that are 300 and below. So I think that will continue because kids love this game, and it's easy to play, and it's cheap to play, and it's, you know, it's obviously the you know, the advent in the past 50 years, more and more of the black athlete coming into this game has simply made it spectacular and made many, many more good players that didn't have the opportunity prior to this era.
Rick Byrd, head coach at Belmont, joining us here at Barrel House. You had mentioned some of the mid-majors. Let me bring it back to Murfreesboro with what Kermit Davis and Middle Tennessee State had to go through. I felt like they got somewhat snubbed for March Madness. He's obviously on his way to Ole Miss. Talk a little bit about them being left out of the tournament and also what you kind of expect from Kermit as he heads to the SEC.
Well, I expect that Kermit will coach his team great. We've played them for over a decade every year, and so I've had to watch his teams play and prepare for them, and I can honestly say that no one that we play, do their players try harder to do what their coach wants them to do than Middle Tennessee State's players, and do it well and do it consistently. If you look at their conference record over the last 3 years or so, not many times when they didn't show up and lost a game they shouldn't have. Yep, Marshall at home this year, and it was a killer at the end of the year for sure. But he will coach good enough, without a doubt. But you know, he would be the first to tell you it's about getting the players. And Ole Miss has not been in the top echelon of attracting great players in the SEC. So I've got a ton of confidence in Kermit's ability to coach whoever he gets. But he's coaching against some great coaches, and he's certainly coaching against programs that attract great players.
Rick Byrd, we will continue on with him. He's going to stick around for the next half hour, so stay right there. We'll get into more March Madness when we come back. It is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.